Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Okay, here's our bonus episode of Whiskey Congress. So we made it a 100% Trump episode, which we both hate, but happens, whatever.
Our previous episode.
Yes, our previous episode. In a normal world, the United Auto Workers strike would have been the top story almost every night. And honest to God, Steve, I forgot it was going on until I drove by a Chevy plant in town and there were protests or, you know, picketers outside the plant. That's crazy.
You know what? And so, you know, my dad works for GM.
Right.
So
for you, it was obviously for, more
for me,
day-to-day.
It's a little bit different. But my dad's not in the union. He's in administrative management. So, like, he was going to work every day, but he literally had very little staff to work for him. But my dad being the guy that he is, like, who knows what he was doing in that plant while no one else was there. I'm sure he probably just rearrange an entire assembly line. That's just
right
type of guy he is.
I've been wanting to do a fix for 10 years, and now
right, exactly. I mean, like, that's it. He's just like, you know what? I've been checking. You know what? I'm gonna just fix this. Which is good. It's also terrible if he's your dad because, like, he makes you do all sorts of random shit for no fucking reason. Even now, like, so I'm still bitter about it.
It doesn't show.
I love my dad. But yeah, no, the strike is, it normally would, it would be big news.
It was barely on the radar. I mean,
but the reality is it's you know, GM used to be the largest employer in the state of Ohio.
And maybe the country.
Maybe.
I don't know that to be sure. I think at one point they were.
Maybe. And if it wasn't them, it was Ford.
And I'm talking about like 1975 yeah. or 80, whatever. But
they and so when they're the largest employer in the country, then that's massive. But now General Motors is literally, I think, in the top between 20 and 15. Like, they're between 20 and 15 in the state of Ohio.
Okay.
Right. So still wow. big, but not nearly as big as right. they were. If I had to guess who the biggest employer in the state of Ohio is, I mean, probably some agency, state agency, or...
I don't know.
You know, maybe Cuyahoga County.
You know, it could be... Oh, shoot.
You know, Ohio? Or Cleveland Clinic, something like that.
Well, right. I mean...
Because there's a Cleveland Clinic on every corner throughout the state, right?
And even outside the state. There's
Cleveland
Clinic.
Even outside the country.
Other, yeah.
There's
yeah.
a Cleveland Clinic in Dubai.
Right.
Like, how? Right? I mean, there's a Cleveland Clinic down in Florida. Like, it's crazy. So, chances are it may be Cleveland Clinic, but I don't know. Either way, I know it's not GM.
Right.
And so for them to be on strike, you know, it's significant, but it just doesn't, you know, I guess I almost wanted to tell you, I'm like, I don't know if this is really worth talking about. It's important, right? I mean, like, to a degree, but I mean, there's a lot of reasons why it's not that important. If you look at one, they're not producing the same amount of cars as they were. The auto industry just is not the same. You have literally an entire generation of people who really aren't that big on driving. They don't own cars. They Uber and take public transportation. They live in downtown urban settings. You know, there's a lot of people living and moving into downtown Cleveland who don't own cars.
Right.
They use those little weird scooters and bikes, and they use, you know, rideshare services and all that other stuff. They actually use public transportation. They are like, I don't need a car. It's an extra expense that I literally don't need in any way, shape, or form. So I think, I guess the conversation is, well, you tell me. Why are we talking about this?
There's two things.
It would have been big news. Is the conversation that it's not? Because it's not all because of Trump.
No, it's not. It's not even mostly because of Trump. Is it?
Well, I don't know.
The tariff situation, and by the way, I also want to talk about Cleveland Whiskey because that came up today.
Well, yes, but the strike in particular, part of the reason why it is in the news, but it's not being covered. There's so, like, Trump creates and generates so many headlines that where is this going to fit in terms of things that people truly care about? Like, unless you are one of the striking workers, right, or a family member of, but This isn't like, if you look at shit worth that you are worried about, if you're not a UAW worker,
where does this land?
Right.
Now, here's the thing. I am in theory or in concept a pro union guy, big time. However, I've heard horror stories from my days when I lived in Buffalo. There was a GM plant there, and I had a friend that I worked with who was previously with that GM plant. And he said that the union would cover up work behavior that was revolting. I mean, he told me basically women could not work on the assembly line. They would get groped and harassed to levels that were disgusting. And they did it because they knew the union, quote unquote, had their back. Yeah. That's not having your back. It's allowing behavior that if... Typically, we say you can say things at a bar that you couldn't say at work. These people are doing things at work
that if I did at a bar,
I would get
a bottle over your head.
A bottle over my head and or arrested, or, you know, and would deserve it.
Yes.
Right? If you walk up and just grab a coworker's ass and just whatever.
Unless you're Donald Trump, you can just grab him by the pussy. Pussy.
There's that. But seriously, I mean, he would tell me that women would just get groped and mistreated. And the union, they did it because they knew they had complete union protection. That's not... protecting workers.
Right.
That's,
I mean, listen. I'm rambling. Sorry, I work directly. Like, I work directly in for my employer. We have union employees.
Okay.
And you know, I work a lot with our legal department. And you know, one of our attorneys that deals with that specifically. I don't deal with any of the human resources labor type stuff. I'm all in real estate and all that stuff, but. You know, talking with our legal staff, they said one of the biggest issues that they have is their inability to get rid of bad employees that are union employees because the union comes in and they literally basically form a cocoon around the bad actor. And us as an employer, we kind of get bullied by the union, and ultimately we end up keeping this person. They get reprimanded, they get moved, they get, you know, demoted, something like that. But they keep their job.
And they know that they can do whatever the fuck they want.
I mean, and they file these grievances, and it's just like, oh, I got this grievance. It's like, oh, you know, and they're constantly, you know, you got a ton of union employees constantly, you know, looking for a way to get disability. It's just like, oh, I've got emotional trauma because... A trash can fell and it scared me at my desk, and now I'm having headaches and I can't sleep at night. Like, literally bullshit like that, right? And I mean, it's just like you see that, and that's the bad side of unions.
Yes.
Okay. But the good side of unions is if you take them away, which your corporate America wants unions gone, like all the big, like they want unions gone because as soon as you can completely cripple a union. Wages are going to plummet, right? Wages job plummet, security is going to benefits. Plummet.
Yep.
Benefits are going to go away, right? Jobs where people are making $20, $25 an hour will go to $15 an hour, right? Like, hours are going to be cut. Like, you know, instead of, you know, overtime and all that other stuff, that's going to go away. You know, like, they get sick time, their pensions, all that shit's going to go away. Cost to the employer is going to be reduced. And what they will tell you is that, oh, this will get passed to the consumer. Things will get cheaper. When has anything in this country gotten fucking cheaper?
You know, I always say that...
I mean, other than fucking gas, gas prices fluctuating,
right. Sure.
Nothing has gotten cheaper. You pay more for water. You can't even... The dollar menu at McDonald's has shrunk.
Oh, no, not that.
No, not that. I love the dollar menu at McDonald's.
You know, but the truth is, you're right.
I actually don't.
No, it's not. It's a $2 menu's not bad, though. The double cheeseburger.
Let me tell you. Secret menu item at McDonald's? The triple cheeseburger.
And how much is a triple cheeseburger?
$3.
I will look into that.
Well worth it.
More protein for the buck.
Well worth it.
All right.
Because you get less bun and more meat. It is wonderful. You're welcome, everybody.
The tips you get from Whiskey Congress. You are welcome.
You're welcome.
No, it's a tough balance because I won't ignore the realities of the stuff I've just criticized unions for, but the absence of them... I know. And the absence of them, though, would lead to the things you described. And when unions were at their most critical state, they were... absolutely necessary. I mean,
and they still
people
are
dying in factories and just being like, oh,
not only are they dying in factories, but listen, we need them for Like, we need them for our teachers. We need them for our police. We need them for our firefighters. We need them for various factory workers. We have to have them because, listen, these corporations are ruthless. They only care about the bottom line. They do not give a shit about the actual people working for them. They just don't.
And absolutely true. And right. Truthfully, but you brought up police officers and other. So local employees, they need to worry about the government shitting on them. And if they don't have a union, if they don't negotiate as a team, there are a bunch of individuals, and if every police officer was an individual contractor, that would be really weird. I don't even know how that would work.
Well, that wouldn't work. That's not how it would be.
I know.
It would be, no, it wouldn't be that at all. That's wrong.
Okay,
it would just, I mean,
I'm just what I'm saying, though. If the unions you just mentioned are government employee unions,
yes,
and they still need to be protected from government overreach and government mishandling of things.
Well, I mean, yes, but I mean, like, don't overthink it, right? If you take away unions, they're no different than any other industry. Like, the police, fire, everything else. What happens? Wages plummet. Health benefits go away. Pensions go away.
Right.
All that shit. So all of a sudden, you're putting your life on the line for $15 an hour.
Right.
Right? So now all of a sudden, it's just like, you're working on the east side of Cleveland, East 99th, whatever. Do we want to talk about the Japanese guy? Think about that.
Okay.
You know, you're working in a gang unit. You're working in a violent crime unit. All that other shit. For $15 an hour?
The truth is, you stop doing that, right?
Right,
exactly.
We both talk
about the show, The Newsroom, when Jeff Daniels tells Terry Crews, I wouldn't take a bullet for $1,900 a week. And Terry Crews replies, I wouldn't either, pal, so you better learn to duck.
Yeah.
Well, I ain't taking a bullet for $15 an hour. I can tell you right. That much.
I mean, it's just like, well, why do we need unions?
I know, I love that reference.
Why do we need unions? And for me, it's very, very basic. You have to keep the wages competitive, because if you take away unions, it forces whatever the entity is, whether it's a teachers union, the police union, UAW union, the social workers, whatever, Teamsters. Like, then all of a sudden, those people have no incentive to do that job. None.
Right.
And yeah, you're going to have to put up with some bad actors and the lazy guy and the asshole guy. And I think the union can help themselves a lot by jettisoning some of those people.
Thank you.
Right?
That would be the key.
That would be the key.
You cannot do some of...
Right, like, you can't be an absolute shitbag.
Let me tell you one quick story, because...
Don't do this.
Oh, there was a guy... Okay. All right, no, I
no,
won't
no,
do
no,
it.
All right, tell the story. I mean, now it seems like a dick.
There was a guy who... The guy that told me about the stories about women getting abused at work. There was a guy who, instead of doing his job, built a concession stand that sold the same shit that was sold in the vending machine at work at a quarter less. Rather than doing his job, he was undermining concessions and selling his own shit. Well, he and another coworker had a feud, and that guy came in and took a sledgehammer to his concession stand after hours. Neither of them lost their jobs. One guy was flat out not doing his job and selling shit to undermine the vending company. Another guy vandalized that illegal operation, and they both got away with it. That's
okay,
what
the guy, the guy with the sledgehammer. I
you're gonna go Ice Cube on.
Right? Like, I will always second that notion. And the
should
first
kept
guy,
your word, Brian.
Right? Where's my money, Brian?
Is it Brian?
Where's
Brian?
My money? Yeah, it's Brian.
Okay.
Where's my money, Brian? I mean,
that is that's how extreme it can happen from
listen,
inside source.
You know a personal story of someone that I know who works for a union, who may or may not have physically assaulted her boss.
Oh, yes, I do. Okay,
right?
I was like, where are you going? Yes.
Yes. and she still has a
all
job.
Right, you are now tap dancing like fucking...
It's Gregory Hines.
Gregory Hines, thank
right?
you.
Right, in the movie Tap. but... She still has a job. She was moved, but she wasn't demoted. Everything was kept the same, but she had to be moved out of the building on the different side of town after her actions. But she's protected by a union. Now, I have a personal connection, so, you know, we
you
won't
have
get...
A, you have a dog in the fight, and...
whatever, okay. I mean, but either way...
she doesn't listen to our show, does she?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, but yes, no,
we'll
I do know.
About, no,
I do know the story.
You know,
yes.
I mean, like
she attacked her boss,
right? Like she physically attacked, like not just bumped into, shoved, like physically attacked, and yet still employed, protected by a union, right? Now, mind you, her union rep called me MFing me. Right? Like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I don't fucking know. Do your fucking job. I don't know. Right? Like, I mean, I said fucking fire. It's fucking crazy. You know? I mean, like, I just, you know. But that's just, like, I was amazed she was able to walk out with her job.
No, you told me the story, and I've met her once. Yep. And I was like, okay, I know the story, and you scare me a little bit.
Right. I mean, she can be scary. But yet she kept her job.
Now there's a strike going on also in the Chicago,
right? Chicago teachers, union,
which is a different animal.
So this is a little bit different animal. So yes, they want more money and yes, they want benefits, but the Chicago teachers union, they have positioned themselves and said, listen, for our kids to thrive and for our jobs to be better, we need smaller classrooms. We need
smaller class sizes
or smaller class, like fewer students to teacher yep. ratio.
Which is a huge thing in my opinion.
Well, yeah, I mean, congratulations. You figured out a secret.
Captain
right?
Obvious.
Like, I mean,
Captain Obvious has exactly. arrived in Wisconsin Congress. Okay.
Not only that, but they want smaller class sizes. They also want a nurse in every school. They want a social worker in every school. And they want a librarian in every school. And this is more like of an activist role than that you've actually seen with unions in a long time. And I think it's good. The issue is that, as a union, like, you can really only kind of collectively bargain for, like, benefits and pay. And so they're trying to make a very loose attenuation of class size and connecting it to pay, because the number of students that you're having to deal with isn't commensurate with the amount of money that you're making. And I'm not sure how they're doing it with the librarians and the nurses and the social workers, but I don't disagree with them that they need those things. I'm not 100% sure that a strike is the proper platform and format for them to achieve those things, but I also don't know what other mechanism they have to achieve those things. The other issue is that, listen, Chicago, their budget is extremely strained, right? Like, so the reality is, can they afford to have a librarian and a social worker and a nurse in every school and pay? I mean, listen, Lori Lightfoot is the mayor of Chicago. She said, listen, we will give you teachers a 16% raise over the course of 5 years, with, you know, teachers with seniority getting, you know, like, the kind of the benefit of that.
Sure.
And she's really bent over backwards a lot for the teachers, and the teachers are asking for more. And I appreciate what they're asking for, but if you can't pay for it, the only way that this is going to work, you're going to have to increase taxes. Taxes in the city of Chicago are already sky high.
Sure.
Right? I mean, it's not like, I mean, it was just, the reason why I'm in Cleveland right now is that I couldn't, as a public defender, I couldn't afford to live and stay there. So, you know, like, that's a battle that they're going to actually have to fight. And they're going to have to figure out. And unfortunately, they're doing it, you know, kind of at the risk of harming the kids, right? Like, these kids need to be in class. They need to be learning. But at the same time, like, listen, if you got 50 kids in a classroom with one teacher and a teacher's aide, how many of these kids are actually learning anyway?
Good luck, right? And, you know, it's a funny thing because Chicago, we've talked about Chicago from a perspective of street violence and police shootings and whatever. There was a teacher strike across the state of West Virginia last year. Now, there are probably 1/4 of as many people in the state of West Virginia as the city of Chicago. In fact, less, now that I think about it. But you could not pick much more different places than rural West Virginia and Chicago. And a lot of my, a few friends of mine are teachers in West Virginia, and they are hardcore right-wing, Trump, whatever, and they were striking. And it just shows how the education system is not elevating kids out of a bad situation, whether the bad situation is rural West Virginia or urban Chicago. If you want to fix the core problem, helping kids get educations, feeding them right. I mean, there's a lot of things that come from primary education. And before anyone says, oh, it's the family. Family matters, absolutely. Having a good family helps a ton.
But
a lot of these kids don't have that.
Well, the other issue is, too.
And that's true in both West Virginia and Chicago.
It's true in West Virginia and Chicago and, you know, and Kentucky and Alabama and Mississippi.
Los Angeles.
And LA, where, you know what I mean? Like, and these are places where all these places that we just listed, but they have terrible educational ratings for their public schools. But there are places where we've seen it in New York, we've seen it in LA, we've seen it with some charter schools in Chicago, and even some places here locally, is you can have these situations where these kids have these really terrible family situations at home. But if you give them the right environment in school where they spend most of their time, they're there 8 hours a day, right? They're there from like 8 o'clock until 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, depending on
right.
what programs are available. If you take these kids and you put them in the small classrooms, right, where there's no more than 20 kids or 25 kids in a class, right, and you've got a teacher and a teacher's aide, you've got social workers, you've got a librarian, you've got a nurse, and why are librarians important? Like, so that the kids can go in the library, they're not just sitting there running around, ripping books apart and trying to burn the pages, right?
Right.
They actually can go to the library and figure out and find books and actually read and learn. So, and if they have a question, there's someone there who can answer it.
Provide them with the opportunity.
Right, the opportunity. And then, like, social workers are important because it's just like, oh, you don't have food at home? You don't have lights and water at home? Let's figure out what's going on and try to resolve that.
Your mom's boyfriend is an abusive psycho?
Yes, all these things. That's why a social worker is important. Yes. The teacher can't do all those things. A nurse, like, you're sitting here bleeding out of your whatever, or you've got, you know, like, you've had a runny nose and a cough and whatever for a fucking month, like, you're getting other people sick. Let's figure out what the fuck is wrong with you. Like, all those things are, like, it's not the job. Yeah, the fuck it is. Yes, it is. It takes a fucking village, and a school is part of the village, and you need those things in the school. If you actually care and you want to see these kids succeed, you got to give them a fucking chance. If they're not getting it at home, then they got to get it at school. That's the only other place that they have an option. Because then if you say, we're not going to give you the money to do it at school, and we're going to throw your dad in jail because he was walking down the street with a bag of weed in his pocket, and so you need to make all the right decisions, and if you do anything wrong, we're going to throw you in jail, then ultimately what that means is you don't actually give a fuck about that kid. You want that kid to be in jail. You don't want that kid to actually succeed. Right? Like, so yeah. If you put those things in place in the school and you give them a fucking chance, all of a sudden you've seen it. Listen, not every kid is going to go off and be a doctor and an astronaut or Barack Obama, right? But if you can get these kids in a position where they can go off and they can work at Chase Bank, or they can be a manager at Walgreens, or they can, you know, start their own business.
They can be a fucking machinist.
Right, you know,
learn a trade.
Or a trade, or be a plumber.
Get out of the fucking cycle.
Get out of the cycle of bullshit.
Yes.
Right? Get out of the cycle of bullshit that is ruining the inner city. That's how you fucking do it. That's one of the ways that you do it.
Without that, I don't know if the other things even matter, to be honest with you.
Right, they don't.
If you don't give that stepping stone, I mean, yes, you know, let me, you know, say, all those will say, well, it all starts in the household. Yeah, it does.
It'd be great.
Without the other piece,
here's the thing. We've seen it. We've seen the model work where you take a bad school system and you take a school, right, even if it's a charter school or whatever, and you put it, like Diddy's done it in New York, what LeBron James is doing in Akron, and, you know, his school is relatively new, so we haven't seen the results, but I have a hard time believing that's not going to work out with the amount of resources there, and we'll get to him and his whole shit. But we've seen there are direct examples in D.C. and L.A. of where they said, we're going to have these smaller class sizes, we're going to offer all these various services. Right. Listen, this isn't a new concept of having a nurse, a librarian. You know, the social worker might be relatively new, but listen, schools used to have this. Kids had home ec. They taught all these different things. They had nurses in the schools, right? Like the teacher, the class sizes were way smaller. So this isn't a new concept. But we know now that reintroducing those things from the past and the things that we just said, we know that they work. We've seen it. We have evidence-based proof of it working and helping these kids matriculate through school, have a better understanding of the material that they're learning so that they're ready to actually step into college. Because the problem is now, you have some of these kids who fight through these inner city schools and they make it and they graduate and they're the valedictorian of their class in, you know, inner city East High Tech, right? And they get a scholarship. Yo, you graduated with a 4.0 from Inner City East High Tech. So you get to go to Youngstown State University. And then they get to Youngstown State University and they are overwhelmed. They don't know a thing. They can barely read. And they realize that they are overmatched and they quit and they drop out. And you know how I know this? I have multiple people who are professors at Cleveland State and Youngstown State who feel awful giving these kids Fs and Ds on their papers. Right? These kids were the top of the class, the cream of the crop, where they kept whatever their inner city school was. And now they can't even get a passing grade in a base level college course because they're not prepared because of how fucked up these inner city school systems are.
And I can tell you, I went to a lower middle class suburban school and college, and I went to school at the prestigious West Virginia University, where I know, don't hate me because I had this, but whatever. It was a huge challenge for me. I mean, I had a fucking college professor for a father, and went to a good school in a lower middle income suburb of Buffalo, and it was a huge jump for me. Now, if I came from Hutch Tech, is one of the big inner city power schools, if I came from that, it would be that much harder. And throw in today's economic issue where going to college is so fucking expensive. Now, even if you get some scholarship advantages from, you know, income, you know, coming from a lower income family, it's still crippling to take on debt.
Well, it's a little bit different. I mean, there's certain things, like a lot of these kids, you know, if you manage to get out of it, like usually these kids are taken care of at state schools.
Okay.
Right? I mean, let's just all be right. Full disclosure, full honesty.
Okay.
If you're a kid from the inner city and you make it, like you, there are scholarship opportunities for these kids. But what happens is a lot of these kids, not all.
But don't they often get low interest loans and a bunch of, honestly, I don't know what it's like today.
There's a lot of different ways that this could work. There are some kids who do get pretty decent scholarships, and they're paying very little to go to school. But the problem is that they're just not prepared for it. Now, the other aspect of it is that this isn't like there's no monolith. Like there's so many different variations.
Sure.
Because there's some kids who come out of these schools, and they get to a school like Akron or Youngstown State or Kent State or West Virginia or whatever, and they do just fine. Right? They matriculate all the way through, and they're great.
Matriculate a lot today.
That's the term you use when you're how do you get through school? That's what you matriculate through. But these kids, they make it through, and they do just fine. They go on and they have great careers. So we shouldn't lump them all in.
Right.
But there's enough empirical data to say that kids from these inner city schools they have a tough time coming out. Like it depends on the school that they're coming from. So there's a lot of variables. So we really shouldn't lump all inner city schools in together. But from my hometown, a lot of kids who make it out of an East or a Cheney or a Wilson or whatever, and some of these schools are closed, they had really tough times going to YSU and Kent State and things like that because they really weren't prepared.
But big picture, in general, the public school systems in this country serve a clientele, whether you want to call it the family or the kids themselves, in a way that when they have the tools to do their job, we can tell them, you better do your job. And when you put them in a spot where they can't, then you're just inviting failure and the cycle continues.
Yeah. I mean, because the issue isn't public school, right? Because you have the public schools in the suburbs.
Some of them are good, yeah.
A lot of them, most of them are fine, right? They get passing grades, like the school systems themselves in the burbs get passing grades. Most of the kids are fine. A majority of them, you know, go on to college, or they go on to trades, right? Like
they are streamlined to go to college, which is true of me.
They are, right. They're pushing to college, but now they have these different programs where these kids are literally able to break out and go, like, listen, school's not your thing. You want to be a mechanic? Go here. They have special programs.
I think we need more of that.
Right. Yes. And you need to balance things out because you do need more people with trades. You know, like they talk about, we have all these unfilled jobs. We need all these various skill sets. And so that's not wrong. So we need to push people into trades. But I do think people still need to go to college and they still need to get that diverse type of education. Although I do hate a lot of the settings on college campuses right now with this overly sensitive, overly political correct, overly just crippling need to be anarchist and activist, and you know, everything needs to be set for every different diverse group and all this other shit. Like, I don't think that's healthy either on college campuses, right? I went to a school on the East Coast. There was some activism, but it wasn't a ton, right? But now I can't imagine what the University of Massachusetts is like right now.
I need to do comedy on a college campus and see what happens. I know you think I'll get eaten alive.
I think you get booed a lot, mostly because you're not funny.
Oh, you suck. You know what? You know who's not funny? You. I'll tell you who's... See, just because you make you laugh does not make you funny. All right, man.
Makes it funny to me.
And you know what? Often I am my own target audience, so I get that. But the political correctness thing, I think, sometimes gets overblown. No, it's definitely got some reality to it. I mean, there's lots of...
I mean, listen, there's comedians who won't go to college campuses.
Including Jerry Seinfeld. And Dave Chappelle. Well, but at least Chappelle is an envelope pusher. Jerry Seinfeld is about as white bread as it gets as a comic. I mean, he doesn't say fuck. He has one joke where he drops an F-bomb. And he won't do college campuses. Now, also, he also charges like ridiculous amounts per ticket, so that probably plays a role. But... yeah, he doesn't want to deal with the PC aspect. I kind of want to delve in and see what happens as a nearly 50-year-old cisgendered white dude with a shaved head and see what happens if I tell my joke about...
Try to get yourself booked at fucking Baldwin Wallace.
I should.
I mean, liberal arts college.
You know what? That's a challenge for the show.
Go to Oberlin, something like that. If you do it, I'll go.
Good, I might need you.
Because you might need me.
All right, let's talk some sports. We were so political, so shit, both the regular show and the show.
We ain't about to move our politics because of this idiot.
Oh, because of LeBron?
Yeah.
You know what? All right, so what's your stance? So you want to do the story?
Here's the deal. For the last few years, the NBA has been playing preseason games and doing, you know, various...
International
kind of events, specifically in China. It's no secret... China's got a billion people, and it's a huge market, and a ton of corporations, companies, entities, NFL, NBA, they all want to get in the Chinese market because they got a billion people. They got a lot of money. Now, the one thing that gets left out is that it's really hard to get the money that you make out of China, or to get the money that you make, it's hard to get it out of China, right? It's not that easy.
We have income inequality, but... theirs is amazingly different. Theirs is absurd. Yes.
So that and they also like the government runs a lot of these, you know, various corporations. Like there's a lot of their media, all of it. So the NBA this year they were in China. Houston was there, and the general manager from Houston, Daryl Morey, tweeted out that he stood by Hong Kong and was all for freedom, just freedom in general, and was supporting Hong Kong. Hong Kong. It's fighting for their own independence, and China is doing everything they can to block it. The government is fighting the Chinese protesters, and it's a mess over there. If you want to know more about it, look it up. We won't get into the intricacies
right.
of Hong Kong and Britain and China and all that other shit. But Daryl Morey tweets out, hey, support Hong Kong. China throws a shit fit. Literally throws a shit fit. And is demanding an apology from Daryl Morey and from the Houston Rockets, from the NBA. And Adam Silver, who is the commissioner of the NBA, says, listen, I'm not going to apologize for what he said. We believe in free speech. We believe in free expression. We believe in freedom in general. It's unfortunate that the Chinese got upset, but this is our stance. Pretty solid. I mean, his reply was pretty solid.
Agreed.
So the Chinese are like pissed because the NBA didn't fully capitulate to their demands of an apology and praising the communist regime of China. So you see things happening like they're taking down the billboards and we're not sure if the game is going to happen. I don't believe the game was actually played between the Lakers and the Houston Rockets.
I think you're right.
I think China shut it all down. LeBron James was asked about it, and LeBron James comes out and says that Daryl Morey wasn't educated on the situation going on between the Chinese and Hong Kong, and he shouldn't have put the tweet out there because of the impact that it had to LeBron and his team.
Okay. Now, my history with LeBron, you know well. I was a huge fan. I was a hater when he was in Miami. I jumped back on the bandwagon, and now, to me, he can do no wrong. He brought a title to Cleveland. He, in my opinion, is a great ambassador to his sport. He does a lot of things with his money.
Philanthropy.
Yeah, yes. I mean, he's done a lot of great things, a lot of them locally. So I am a huge fan. Having said that, this is a LeBron. LeBron's getting a call from his financial advisor going, dude, you got a billion people out there. You got to keep your name in the game. And this is not philanthropy from LeBron. This is economics 101. And I'm not mad at him for it. And I'm not going to call him an idiot. I am going to say it's self motivated. Greed would be a fair word, I guess. Now, LeBron makes more money in 2 minutes than I make in a week, but
He probably makes more in 2 minutes than you make probably in a month.
Okay,
I mean, like, or maybe more. Like, I mean,
I don't. Yeah, I mean, he's doing fine.
He's close to a billionaire. I mean,
he probably is a billionaire. And again, as a basketball player, he's phenomenal. Maybe the best of all time. I think this is a bad look for him. I don't think it'll hurt him.
But all right, let me jump in here. So, listen, he fucked up, okay? He fucked up. You're right. You checked all the boxes, right? This is about LeBron has... LeBron is focused on becoming a billionaire. He wants to be a mogul. He wants to own a team. He wants to own a media company. He wants to dominate. And part of that is driven by the fact that ESPN did a 30 for 30 called Broke, right? Talking about athletes going broke. Now, they did a good job of highlighting Bernie Kosar and...
Warren Sapp is the one.
Well, no. They did a good job of highlighting white athletes that went broke.
Okay.
But the stigma is, you know, you pay these young rich niggers all this money and then they just blow it and they end up broken in jail. That is the stigma, period. Like, we're not going to argue about it. That's just... Professional athlete, you think of someone black blowing money on chains and strippers and drugs and weed and then being in jail, right? So LeBron sees that, sees the stigma. Like, and listen, plenty of examples, right? Like,
yeah.
Well, part of the reason why there's a stigma...
It wasn't fabrication.
It wasn't fabrication because you had plenty of guys who... Like, I mean, the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, the money blew up in the late 80s, early 90s, and into the 2000s, it got astronomical. So you have people like Antoine Walker. You've got people like Warren Sapp. You've got people like...
Terrell Owens was in a financial situation for a while.
Yeah, I mean, Lawrence Taylor. You had people, you know, Bernie... Bernie Kosar and, like, all these people who went through all this financial trouble, and I'm sure there's a million other people that you could mention. Lenny Dykstra.
And the big example, or the big thing, rather than throwing out names, there was, like, a statistic, like, 80% or something like that ex-NFL players were bankrupt within 5 years of their careers.
Right. Now, the fucked up thing...
Pull those numbers out of the air, but they're not far from right.
Right. It's a huge number. The NFL is a little bit different because the careers are so short.
Right.
They don't
make nearly... And there's no guaranteed money.
There's no guaranteed money.
Or little guaranteed money.
They
fight for guaranteed money now.
When those stats were legit.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, so LeBron James sees all of this happening around him, right? Like, these athletes being labeled specifically black, all that, and said, not going to happen to me. And the only way I can make that happen to me is if I keep making money all the time, never not making money. And the only way I'm going to do it is, like, the only way I could do it, like, I can't be a consumer, I have to be an owner. So LeBron owns everything. Like, LeBron won't do anything if he can't buy into the company. Same thing with Jay-Z. Like, Jay-Z doesn't do anything unless he owns part of it. Right, like LeBron, like people are just like, LeBron doesn't drive that Kia. The fuck he doesn't, and he doesn't just drive it. He owns a small part of Kia.
A dealer, is there a dealership or an actual company?
No, actual company.
All right,
that's how it fucking works. You want to do business with LeBron? He's got to own part of your company, right? The pizza place that he opened up that spread all over the court, all over the place. He's like, yeah.
Fire or whatever.
Yeah, Fire Pizza. He owns part of the company. That's how it works. So with him, he's driven by that. Now people, now you're just greedy. And LeBron's just like, fuck you. I want all of them. I'm here for all of it. And listen, he's going scorched earth because that's what media, guys like you, back in the early 90s, or late 90s, 2000s, all these black athletes, blah, 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 blowing money. Come on, you know you're in the group. It's fine. Okay? So LeBron is saying in turn, oh yeah? And he's like, so I'm going to China. And LeBron's like seeing Daryl Morey put this tweet out, China's pissed. So he's like, you're fucking with my money. Right? And they're just like, LeBron, but freedom and people and freedom of speech. Fuck you. You're fucking with my money. Did you see the special? Whatever. Is he taking it too far? Absolutely. He said the wrong thing. Now, he can fix it. Right? Like, it's going to be hard. He can fix it. What I would do, and I put this out on Twitter, if I were LeBron, right? If I were his people, I'd be like, all right, listen, dog, you fucking up. So this is how you fix it. We're going to do a documentary on the issues with Hong Kong going back to, you know, whenever the British took over and then they handed it over.
They handed it over in 1999.
Right, when they handed it over and then blah, blah, blah. And up until today, we're going to do a documentary on it. And you're not going to be any part of it other than the executive producer. And you're going to come in at the end and say, hey, freedom is great, right? Love America. And then that's how we're going to end it. That's the only way that he can even begin to fix this. Otherwise, he's going to have to just let it blow over. You're right. He will be fine. But that's his mentality. And I don't necessarily wrong him for that. Because for so long, being a black athlete, making all that money, like you were... Like you, people were looking at their watch and basically looking at your bank account, waiting for you to go broke and waiting for you to be on the street so they could attack you, condemn you, write stories about how you blew all your money and you were a wasted talent and blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Right? So he is going above and beyond to make sure that doesn't happen. So I get his mentality, but at the same time, he just doesn't understand the full breadth of the situation. And maybe he'll fix it in time. Maybe he'll come back and say, I didn't really know. Right, maybe his ego gets in the way and he doesn't. I don't know, but that's where I'm at with it.
You know,
so to be clear, he was wrong with what he said fully. I think there's an avenue for him to fix it. He's literally got a media company, he's got Uninterrupted, he's got the barbershop thing on HBO, he literally owns Bleacher Report. So, you've got a million platforms to go make this right. Go do a documentary on Hong Kong and the fucked up situation that they're in. Throw your support behind them. And I would say, as much as this goes against everything that you're doing, and I know why you're doing it, maybe you have to say, fuck the money in China. Right? Maybe, and it's worth it because, like, as an American who loves America, like, it's worth it to support people fighting for freedom, right? Like, you can't sit there and be a freedom fighter for racial injustice and then say, fuck people in Hong Kong.
Okay. I won't argue with any of that. I would say that... you're angry, you're looking at your empty whiskey glass. Right. It's not my... The only reason your whiskey glass is empty is because of you, my friend.
I'm the only one responsible for this.
Yes. But no, I think... I don't have a problem with him defending his financial interests in China. I do think what you said is 100% accurate, that sometimes you gotta... check what's right with greed.
Now, listen. Hold on. I'm sorry. Hold on. I also believe that not only should LeBron do it, the NBA, the NFL, and any American company, fuck China. Fuck them. Right? Like, they have too much control. Listen, have you seen the South Park episode yet?
No.
God damn it,
Jim. I don't even know what it is.
There's a South Park episode where they talk exactly about this exact thing. And what's amazing is that it happened so... South Park releases this episode like 3 weeks ago, right? It's an episode where they're talking about China's influence on media companies in the U.S., right? Like, the boys want to make a movie, but they're trying, like, you know, like, media company, and this is true, right? Like, so media companies like Disney and everything else, like, they want to make these movies, and then they know that they want them to be big in China, and China says, well, this goes against what our government says. This goes against whatever, so you're going to have to take that out.
Was this involved the Avengers at all? Because I heard the Avengers had, like,
yeah, there was certain a small,
scenes.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Okay.
So, and that's true, right? Like, there's certain things that that Disney and other film companies have taken out of their movies because China has said, if you want to play that here, you can't have that scene or you can't have that line, what have you, right? Winnie the Pooh is banned in China. Right, Winnie the Pooh is... How the fuck is Winnie the Pooh banned in China? Well, someone said that Winnie the Pooh looked like the leader of China, Xi, and so they said, all right, well, he's banned. So, China has too much influence over the media, over this, like, all of this. So, I think, just fuck them, right? It's a market that, like, there's no way we can sit here and say we're going to sacrifice our freedom of speech, the thing that we fight for the most besides the Second Amendment, basically. We're not going to give that up just to make money in fucking China. So fucking give it up. Take all that shit to Europe. Well, let's build up South America. Let's build up fucking Africa. Like, figure out a way to make to maximize that market and just fuck China.
You know, I'm not going to quite go along with that, but I will say that take the power away
from China. I may have just got his band in China, by the way.
You probably did.
No, fuck him.
Well... When you say fuck them, that tends to... South Park did a whole lot less, and they got banned in China. They had that episode banned. I actually saw Joe Rogan
talk
about them.
Yes, they're banned in China.
All right, I want to talk a silly sports thing for a bit, but I want to wrap this up. But I want to ask one simple question. Can you name a time when South Park took a social political stance and they were wrong?
Nope. Not once.
Me either.
I've been watching that show from its inception. I watch it.
I watch it in grad school.
I've watched that show. I was in high school. I have watched that show consistently for the last 20 fucking years. Right?
They're fucking brilliant.
They
are like, absolutely fucking brilliant.
I mean, like, yes, they are, because they literally haven't been wrong.
They have been wrong. They throw punches at everyone and they keep getting, they're so good. I mean,
it's the same thing, like I said, with Trump, right? Like, so the issue with Trump is the media keeps fucking up and they give him material to say fake news, right? With Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the guys who do South Park, like, we as a society keep giving them the material.
That's true.
Right? Like, I mean, it's literally drink some whiskey, smoke some weed, watch the news, watch stupid people around you, and write a story, and then implant kids in the fourth grade, right? I mean, I think
they are so fucking
good.
I think
they're in the fifth grade now, but...
Or are they? They don't have to be, because they're fucking... that's a brilliance of an animated show is, unlike the Cosby Show or Family Ties or whatever, people don't have to get older.
Right.
The same age.
Right. I mean, I think about 10 or 15 years ago, there was a big thing when the kids went from the third to the fourth grade, or the fourth to the fifth grade.
I went from grad school to old man, and they've gone a year. and they're not shy. Oh. It's not like they tap dance. And I mean, I love The Simpsons, and I give them a ton of credit for their whatever. But to me, South Park is, in my opinion, the most politically, socially influential media show out there.
I don't know if I'll say if it's the most influential only because what they do is they just literally piss everybody off.
People keep coming back.
Yes. I mean, like,
including us. And I offer no apologies. I mean, they're fucking
They make fun of
Hillary Clinton, Trump. Right. I mean, there's a black guy named Token. Kid named Token on that show.
Right. Like,
that
I mean,
should like, offend people.
It should offend you. Me. And it did, kind of, but then I was like, that's fucking hilarious. Cartman
his
just
name
like.
Is Token.
Token, you play the bass. I don't know how to play the bass. Yes, you do. No, I don't. Yes, you do. God damn it, Token. No, I don't. Token picks up a guitar. God damn it, yes, I do. Son of a bitch.
I've never seen that episode, but I can totally picture it in my head. Okay. So, you know what? We have to do an entire show about South Park sometime. That should be one of our like random shows. Real quick, Jalen Ramsey got traded for 2 first-round picks.
What an awful transition.
What? Can I go from South Park to Jalen Ramsey? You give me a segue, and I'll take it, brother. We've got to wrap this up. I just want to talk about how crazy that was to me, that you got 2 first-round picks for a guy who made it clear, I'm not playing for you anymore anyway. So deal with it.
I mean, you gave him 2 first-round picks. The problem is that the Rams defense, you've got Aaron Donald.
Who's a fucking stud.
Right, who's just...
But also, their entire defensive backfield has been changed over.
Right, I mean, like...
The entire defensive backfield is flipped.
Right, like, Jalen Ramsey is now the best player in the defensive backfield. You've got Jalen Ramsey. Rams can't stop the run. Their linebackers aren't that great. They're not really doing a good job of getting pressure on the quarterback. They've got Aaron Donald, and so they're not doing a great job of stopping the run or getting pressure on the quarterback, which means it makes the job of the cornerback, which the position that Jalen Ramsey plays, that much harder. So the question is, are you going to get the full effect of what Jalen Ramsey was able to do in Jacksonville? Because Jacksonville had a really good defensive line, and they've got some really good linebackers, and they had other good DBs around him. So he was able to focus on only purely his job, right? And he knew that if he covered listen, he's an amazing cover man. I mean, he blankets receivers. But the issue is quarterbacks have plenty of time to throw the ball, right? So trying to cover a guy, like, it's great. Like, okay, maybe you do take away the best guy, but there may be three, four other guys out in a route that are going to be open, that are going to be able to, that the quarterback's going to be able to throw the ball to. So what will be the complete effect of him, and is it going to be worth those 2 first-round picks? And my thing is, the answer's probably going to be no. Right? Like, I mean, like, the Jaguars are sitting there like, how the fuck did we just pull that off? I just picture, you know, Shahid Khan, you know, the owner of the Jaguars with that crazy mustache.
Who looks like Saddam Hussein, by the way.
Right, just twirling his mustache, just like, I'm killing it right now.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, and it's a funny thing.
I wish people could see what I was doing.
I'm glad they can't because I have to see it and it's awful. But it's a crazy thing to me because you look at how many talented players go away from a team for so much less under such different circumstances. And here's the guy who literally was telling Jacksonville, I'm not doing this for you anymore. And I hear a lot of talk on sports radio, like, you know, athletes are taking over control of whatever. And that doesn't bring a tear to my eye at all.
No, it's not. But I mean, like, listen, like, you think you're in a better situation because the team that you are going to was in the Super Bowl last year.
Right.
But they probably aren't going to be there this year based off the way they're playing.
They're not off to a good start.
Their quarterback's not playing well. I've got a major beef with him. I have him on two fucking
fantasy teams.
And that motherfucker scored 1 point last week. He played a full game and scored one point. Fuck you, Jared Goff.
By the way, you just spiked her.
Sorry.
Anyway.
I'll
not have your false apology, sir.
But you've got... So, I mean, he's going to a team that probably isn't going to the... They're definitely not going to... Well, you can't say definitely. It doesn't look like they're going to make it to the Super Bowl, and it's questionable if they'll make it to the playoffs because Seattle is in the lead in that division, and so chances are they're going to need to be in a wild card position to make the playoffs, and they're in a dogfight for that. It's early in the season. Sure. Things could turn around.
It's early, but it's not that early, right?
We're going to week seven now. It's really not, right? And so, like, they need a couple wins in a row here to kind of get back into it.
First-round picks. Steve, if you were the Pittsburgh Steelers and...
Well, listen, the Pittsburgh Steelers are a perfect... Listen, they just traded for...
Mickey Fitzpatrick, who's damn good.
Right, who's really good.
What did they give up?
They gave up a first-round pick.
Which I thought was a big give-up.
Right, they gave up a first-round pick, and then I think they swapped like a fourth and a fifth like that. But either way, just one.
One. I thought that was a big give-up for them.
He's a guy who's under control for a longer period of time, who hasn't made demands for a bigger contract, who...
Tweet out ridiculous shit talking trash.
Right, like, I mean, just like who never quit on his team... Right, and you can argue that Jalen Ramsey—that's
a bold statement. But
I'm not saying that he quit. Well, yeah, no, I am going to say that he quit because he said that he was injured. He was completely unable to play. He gets traded like as of like 3 days ago, and now all of a sudden he gets traded. Yeah, I should be ready
America,
to go on Sunday.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, so listen.
Throwing back some.
I don't give a shit about Jalen Ramsey or the Rams or the Jaguars. Right, like I really don't care.
Same, but
you know, I mean, I would
be with the Jaguars just because I'm a Bills fan and Doug Marrone's our coach. Doug Marrone's a douchebag.
I mean, you have a beef with Doug Marrone.
I do. Like, I have a beef with Doug Marrone, and he's
but
part of
I mean, it just like so. This to me, all in all, like I'm a football fan, so I love all of it. I love the drama. I love the game. I love watching it. I love playing it. I love the fantasy football. All of
right.
it. But ultimately, like I don't give a shit about the Rams. Now the Steelers do play the Rams, but I'm not.
And by the way, you cared about the Jaguars last year.
Well,
sorry. They beat the Steelers in the playoffs.
No, that was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, sorry. All right.
Last year, we beat them in the regular season, and then like we didn't make the playoffs.
That's right, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I was being a dick again late. All right, man. You ready to close this up?
Yep.
I enjoy this a lot. So thanks for listening. At Whiskey Congress. You are you? All right. At Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com. If you want to email me, Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com, email him. Thank you for listening. Sorry for the awkward segue, but I had fun, and I'm being selfish. All I care about is me.